Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We open our show today with an update on those terrible wildfires that are burning across California. And with many of our local firefighters dispatched to help battle those blazes up north, we've also got some important tips on how to prepare for evacuations if a fire occurs in our region. Now, a flash flood watch is in effect as we tape our show on Monday, and it's valid through Tuesday night for our mountain and desert areas. So be sure to stay tuned for details on a big storm set to hit our region that is forecast to bring thundershowers. Thunder showers mean lightning, which could mean fires. On our Capitol Report, hear about congressional efforts to defund Planned Parenthood and how your local congressional members voted on that bill. Also hear about one local member of Congress who wants to outlaw not only funding for abortions, but all abortions across the nation from the moment of conception. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announced Sunday that the U.S. would be lifting its cap on refugees to admit more people who have been displaced by wars and human rights violations over the next 2 years. We also have reaction from one local leader in the Iraqi Chaldean American community here in East County. Who sent a hate message to a group advocating a stop to police violence? The group claims it's traced the IP address of the sender, and their answer may surprise you. A tragic accident over the weekend claimed the life of a 7-year-old girl in El Cajon, and we'll have details. A school bond measure has qualified for the statewide ballot, plus a package of bills aimed at regulating medical marijuana have passed the legislature and are now on the governor's desk awaiting signature. A power outage that affected over 90,000 people in San Diego County on Sunday is raising some questions, and we'll have some details on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with David Geffen from Solar City, who will be talking about trends in solar, a major solar tax credit that's about to disappear, and about a new foundation that's helping to bring solar power to schools around the world that previously lacked electricity, as well as how you can help. Helix Water District wants to raise rates over the next 5 years, and one group of citizens is organizing a protest to fight the hike. There are two important meetings coming up for those of you who live in the Helix District and are concerned. On our agricultural report, we'll have the buzz on the county's new beekeeping ordinance that makes it easier to keep bees in your backyard. And from Public News Service, we'll have stories about a court ordering the Navy to drop its sonar testing off our coast due to its impact on whales. Plus, we'll have information about some steps the federal government is taking to protect sea life caught in fishing nets. Today we'll be replaying our interview with Senior Gleaners, a group helping to provide food to people in need, and how you can help donate items to help those who are hungry in our region. And we'll also be re-airing our interview with local author Marnie Friedman. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the status of 8 major wildfires plus 2 new ones burning in California. Currently, 10,000 firefighters are battling the blaze, according to CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bordiser on behalf of County Fire Chief Tony Meacham. CAL FIRE San Diego continues to support the Northern California wildfires with 3 strike teams. That's 15 fire engines and 53 firefighters, plus a dozen hand crews, 160 inmate firefighters, and 3 bulldozers. The Valley Fire has scorched over 75,000 acres and burned over 1,300 structures. Currently, it's 53% contained in Lake County. In Amador and Calaveras counties, the historic California Gold Rush region, the Butte Fire has burned another 870 buildings, charring about 71,000 acres, but it's 71% contained. In Monterey County, the Tassajara Fire has burned 1,200 acres and is 10% contained. Also, the Laurelis Fire in Monterey County has burned 95 acres and is 60% contained. The massive Rough Fire in Fresno County has been proving hard to control. It's scorched over 141,000 acres near the giant sequoias and is 68% contained, according to the U.S. Forest Service. The South Complex fire in Trinity County is 94% contained after destroying over 29,000 acres. And also in Trinity County, the Fort Complex fire burned over 36,000 acres and is 95% contained, while the River Complex fire there has burned 77,000 acres and is 55% contained. The Nickowitz fire in Six Rivers National Forest charred 7,500 acres and is 90% contained. And finally, the Gasket Complex fire in Del Norte County is 47% contained after burning over 30,000 acres. For obvious reasons, CAL FIRE recommends that all residents in California be prepared for wildfire by remembering ready, set, go. Before a wildfire strikes, it is important that you get set. Prepare yourself and your home for the possibility of having to evacuate before it happens. There are three main actions that should be completed and familiar to all members of your household long in advance of a wildfire. First, create a wildfire action plan that includes evacuation planning for your home, family, and pets. Second, assemble an emergency supply kit for each person in your household that includes water, non-perishable food, prescriptions, and important paperwork, flashlights, and a battery-powered radio. And lastly, fill out a family communication plan that includes important evacuation and contact information. To learn more about being prepared for wildfire, visit readyforwildfire.org.
The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood watch, cautioning that heavy rainfall and flash flooding is possible from late Monday through Tuesday in San Diego's eastern mountains and deserts. Rainfall could exceed 2 inches in mountains and could top an inch in the deserts. Recent wildfire-burned areas will be particularly susceptible to flash flooding and debris flows. Be alert to rapidly changing weather conditions, especially if you live in a flood-prone area or have outdoor plans. The forecast is due to low pressure and an approaching plume of deep moisture. A flash flood watch means that conditions may develop that lead to flash flooding. Flash flooding is a very dangerous situation. You should monitor the later forecasts and be prepared to take action should flash flood warnings be issued. This has been a public service announcement from the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service with support from the Grossmont Healthcare District.
Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community. On Sunday, Secretary of State John Kerry announced that the United States will raise its cap on refugees from the current level of 70,000 to accept 85,000 refugees next year and 100,000 in 2017. The news comes in response to a growing refugee crisis of people fleeing ISIS in Syria and Iraq, including Christians and other minorities as well as Muslims. That came as welcome news in El Cajon, where Iraqi American Christians were celebrating at a Chaldean festival Sunday afternoon. Mark Rabo, a spokesman for the Chaldean community in the United States, has been advocating for a raise in the refugee ceiling, including meetings at the White House and with Secretary Kerry. His communications director, Linda Natisha, called the news a major step forward in a statement issued, adding, "This for many in the Chaldean community is a moment of celebration." Although Secretary Kerry's order does not specify how many Chaldean refugees will be admitted, Arabo aims to seek assurances next that a sizable number will be Chaldeans and other religious minorities, Atisha told East County Magazine. Earlier this month, the White House indicated it would take in at least 10,000 Syrian refugees after 4 million Syrians have fled their nation and currently are residing in the United Nations refugee camps. Hundreds of thousands more have taken refuge in Europe, while the U.S. has accepted only 1,500 Syrian refugees. Secretary Kerry has indicated that background checks will be conducted to weed out potential terrorists and that the U.S. refugees accepted from Syria will come off of a list the United Nations prepared before the influx of migrants to Europe, the New York Times reports. Additional refugees will also include Africans threatened by human rights abuses, including immigrants from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with the Capitol Report. The House of Representatives voted Friday to defund Planned Parenthood. The measure is not expected to pass the Senate, and President Barack Obama has said he will veto it. The vote was 241 to 187, with Republicans Duncan Hunter, Daryl Issa voting to end funding, while Democrats Susan Davis, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas voted to protect it. Now Republicans are threatening to shut down the government on September 30th if any Planned Parenthood funding for women's health is included in the federal budget. The vote was prompted by videos shot undercover by an anti-abortion group. The videos show Planned Parenthood discussing obtaining fetal tissue from aborted fetuses for medical research, seeking cures for diseases such as Alzheimer's. The group claims Planned Parenthood was selling fetal parts, but no charges have been filed. Planned Parenthood says the videos were heavily edited and it has not broken the law, which allows use of fetal tissue for research as long as no profit is made. Federal law already prohibits any federal funds from being used for abortion, except in rare cases such as when a mother's life is endangered. Cutting all funding to Planned Parenthood would mean the money would be eliminated for other women's services such as breast cancer screening and birth control. Democratic Congressman Scott Peters issued a statement blasting Republicans for standing in the way of getting a budget passed to fund other vital services. He states, "Roads are crumbling, bridges are falling down, and the United States is again faced with a government shutdown. Instead of tackling these critical problems, Republicans in Congress would rather waste our time resurrecting a battle that was settled by the Supreme Court 40 years ago." Republican Duncan Hunter makes clear on his website that his concern is not merely with the video or Planned Parenthood. His goal is to defund and ultimately outlaw all abortions. His website states, "To prevent federal funding for the abortions or abortion providers, I am a co-sponsor of H.R. 217, the Abortion Provider Prohibition Act, offered by Representative Diane Black. This bill would prohibit federal funding under Title X, part of the Department of Health and Human Services, for any entity that performs an abortion." Moreover, Hunter's statement on family values continues, "I am an original co-sponsor of the Life at Conception Act to prohibit abortions by declaring that life begins at conception. This measure is a legislative approach to effectively overturn Roe v. Wade by establishing personhood under the 5th and 14th Amendments."
United Against Police Terror San Diego, a group that documents police-related deaths and advocates for law enforcement reforms, has posted a hate message that it says it received on its Facebook page. Mitchell Sterling, the group's spokesman, claims that the sender's IP address has been traced to the Sheriff's Department. The message was laced with profanity and name-calling. It went on to defend law enforcement, faulting criminals and protesters like those in Ferguson for police violence. The message ended with a veiled threat stating, "The good people of this county and country will always prevail over scum like you. Good luck. You're going to need it." Sheriff's spokesperson Melissa Aquino told Voice of San Diego, "We are taking this very seriously, and an internal investigation is underway to determine where, how, and who it came from." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A 7-year-old girl died Saturday evening after being struck by a Ford Ranger pickup truck in the parking lot of an apartment complex where she lived on North Johnson Street in El Cajon. A makeshift memorial for the victim, identified as Riley Jackson by neighbors, has been set up at the site of the tragedy. El Cajon police officers and Heartland Fire paramedics responded to the scene at 7 p.m. after the driver called 911. According to the medical examiner's office, a girl and another child were playing in the parking lot when the victim ran out from behind a dumpster into the path of the Ford Ranger. The driver, Bradley Brown, a 20-year-old from National City, remained at the scene and has been fully cooperative with the investigation, said Lieutenant Soulard with the El Cajon Police, who added that neither alcohol nor speed were factors. The young victim was transported to Rady's Children's Hospital, where she was pronounced dead of her injuries shortly after arrival. The El Cajon Police Department wants to remind pedestrians to always cross at controlled intersections or designated crosswalks and to wear bright or reflective clothing during darkness hours. For more tips on pedestrian safety, you can visit elcajonpolice.org and click the police video link. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. California's Secretary of State has confirmed that a $9 billion school construction bond measure has qualified for the November 2016 ballot. The measure is sponsored by Californians for Quality Schools. Money approved in the past by voters for both K-12 and higher education over the last 8 years is nearly tapped out, the Sacramento Bee reports. This bond measure is not the only education funding initiative that voters may be asked to weigh in on. A second initiative has been proposed by the California Teachers Association, along with labor, health, and police unions, that would extend some temporary taxes that voters approved back in 2012, with a portion of that used to also fund education.
A trio of bills to regulate medical marijuana in California has passed the legislature and now await Governor Jerry Braun's signature. The measures cover the billion-dollar cannabis industry from farming to dispensaries. A new Bureau of Medical Marijuana will issue licenses for transportation and distribution. In addition to state licenses, local, city, or county licensing will also be required. But jurisdictions with existing registrations can keep them, and voters can also weigh in on issues such as taxing the growing or sale of medical marijuana. The new legislation, if signed, will define medical marijuana as an agricultural product subject to regulations regarding water use, pesticides, and more, overseen by the Department of Food and Agriculture. Edible marijuana products will be subject to testing and labeling under jurisdiction of the Department of Public Health. In response to law enforcement concerns, former felons would be banned from getting licenses unless they have received a rehabilitation certificate. A provision that would have added a tax to fund environmental cleanup and public safety issues related to the cannabis industry failed to win passage, however, and was removed from the final version of the legislation. The measures come nearly two decades after California voters legalized medical marijuana use in 1996, leading to a patchwork of local laws that have frustrated advocates of medical marijuana. The action also comes just weeks after the National Institute of Health found medical marijuana holds promise to treat cancer, a claim long made by the industry advocates who also tout cannabis as a treatment for conditions ranging from glaucoma to headaches. Next up, an initiative calling for legalization of recreational marijuana is expected to qualify for the ballot in California after similar measures won passage in Alaska, Colorado, and Oregon, though some restrictions apply. Action to pass legislation regulating medical marijuana was motivated in part by the push for full legalization of recreational pot, lawmakers have said. Medical marijuana remains illegal under federal law, though 23 states have legalized it, making the future still murky should a new administration opt to crack down on cannabis after next year's presidential and congressional elections. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
An estimated 90,000 San Diego Gas and Electric Company customers lost power for several hours on Sunday afternoon. SDG&E tweeted around 2 o'clock that the California Independent Systems Organization, known as CAISO, ordered it to drop 150 megawatts of load in the service territory around 1:15 p.m. CAISO, a nonprofit, is responsible for maintaining the statewide power grid, in other words, keeping the lights on. The outage affected San Diego and North County, but not East County. However, it's raising questions. A call to CAISO by East County Magazine requesting an explanation has not been returned. City News Service reported that SDG&E's media office did not return calls either during the outage, and that CAISO said it was still assessing the situation and was not clear what occurred. Power was restored later in the afternoon. The outage affected many businesses as well as homes, sending residents scrambling to find air-conditioned locations amid high heat. The outage also impacted traffic signals, and the California Highway Patrol has indicated that some motorists sped through intersections where signals were down. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is David Geffen, who is a consultant with Solar City. That is the largest solar company in the United States, and they've been in San Diego since 2006. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Miriam. I'm very excited to be here today. The solar industry is changing rapidly, and so David's going to be talking with us today about some of the changes in tax credits, some new innovative models for people who are looking to get solar, as well as some things that their company is doing to give back to communities in need and help bring power to places that don't have it, schools and other people in need around the world as part of their social justice mission. So here at the Network for Social Justice, KNSJ, we're very interested to hear more about that. But first, David, I've covered a lot of companies in my day as a business writer before I started this magazine show. And I understand that SolarCity has one of the most interesting stories of how it got started of any that I've heard. Tell us how it was founded.
Yeah, Miriam, it's a little funny how SolarCity actually got created. Our founder, Elon Musk, who happens to be the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX, was driving to a festival called Burning Man. It's mm-hmm. Enormous music festival, happens once a year. And on their drive there with Elon's cousins, they began talking about solar. And they tried figuring out a way to make it more affordable for homeowners to go solar. And that's when the company got started, literally on the drive to Burning Man.
That's really interesting. So what is the mission of SolarCity?
So SolarCity's mission is to get 1 million homeowners by 2018 to have solar on their roofs. SolarCity strives on the fact of making cleaner, more affordable energy to every homeowner in America.
Okay. And I understand that part of that goal is to do that at no cost to the homeowner. Can you explain how is that possible?
Yeah. So back in 06, when we started the company, we came out with something called the solar lease. The solar lease basically allows homeowners to go solar at zero money down and completely eliminate their utility bill with their local company.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who'd like to hear more about that. So you lease the equipment, basically, and then at the end of the 20 years, it goes back? Is that how that works?
So there's two programs right now. There's the basic lease where, after the 20 years, we just come out, we take it off at no additional cost. And then another option where you can actually keep the equipment.
So you finance it to own it as you would with mm-hmm. anything else, car or something.
Yeah. Okay. It's still zero money down to own, but you get to own the equipment after the lease term, which is nice.
Now, an unusual thing about your program, I understand, is that you can actually service somebody's utility company. So if you don't want to pay your bills to SDG&E, you can have SolarCity be your utility company right here in San Diego. Tell us how that works, and can people save money doing that?
Yeah, that's another program that we offer. It's still zero money down to go solar, and we essentially just serve as an alternative utility company for customers.
So how much can they save compared to SDG&E on, say, an average house?
Yeah, on an average house, the savings range from 20 to 60%.
20 to 60%?
Mm-hmm.
And it's zero down. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that the tax credit situation is changing. State tax credits have gone away, at least for now, but I understand there's still some pretty good federal ones. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as it stands right now, there is a 30% federal tax credit for people who go solar and own the equipment,
mm-hmm.
right? It's been around for several years now. And at the end of 2016, the federal government is either going to eliminate it completely or decrease it to 10%.
Wow. So in other words, between now and the end of this year is the window. If someone really wants to go solar, it's pretty smart to do it before the year's end so you can still get that 30% federal tax credit instead of 10% or less.
Absolutely, yeah. If you are thinking of going solar, I strongly advise you to do it in the next upcoming months mm-hmm. so that you can reap the full benefits with regards to the tax credit.
Yeah, that's an important tip. How many years does it take to pay off the solar system until it's basically paying for itself with what you would save on utilities? How many years with that 30% tax credit?
Yeah, so typically if you do purchase your system outright, the return on investment ranges between 7 to 10 years.
Okay, that's not too bad if you're going to be in your house for a while. Now, what if you're not there 10 years, 7 years? What if you wind up selling sooner? How much of it do you typically get back on the sale of your house? Because it's important to note that going solar isn't just about what you save on your utility bill. It's also how much you can sell your house for when you put it on the market, because it does increase the value of a home.
Yeah, great question, Miriam. UC Berkeley, they did a study across the nation, and homes that have solar typically sell for $17,000 more on average, and they sell 30% quicker than they normally would.
Very interesting. $17,000 you get back when you sell the house, and you sell it faster. So that's a pretty good benefit. What does a typical solar system cost to buy?
They typically range between $15,000 to $25,000 on average.
So you're pretty well going to get all or most of that back when you sell the house.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. The other thing that's worth noting is people may want to start calculating in what you can save on gasoline, because the trend seems to be more and more toward going to electric cars. Are these systems powerful enough that you could power up your electric car if you own one or buy one someday?
Yeah, and a lot of people who go solar have electric cars. Right now in San Diego County, if you have an electric car, you're sort of forced to charge it overnight, because that's when you get the very low rates with SDG&E. Mm-hmm. If you were to charge it during the day, you would be paying ridiculously high prices to charge your car.
So with, say, a Solar City system, or anybody else's for that matter, do you then have the ability that you can charge it whenever you want and not be charged more?
Absolutely. You have the freedom and the flexibility to charge your car at your own convenience without having to be penalized mm-hmm. with the higher prices.
Very nice benefit. Now, Solar City is doing something unusual that I really haven't seen any other company in this niche do, and that is that you're giving back to communities in need around the world through your Give Power Foundation. David, tell us how that works.
Yeah, so our Give Power Foundation is a nonprofit. Essentially, what we do is for every megawatt of residential solar that Solar City installs, we donate a system with a backup storage to a school without electricity in need.
What are some of the countries that the Give Power Foundation through Solar City has helped, the local schools?
So as of right now, we have helped Nicaragua, Nepal, Senegal, Kenya, and many more.
Very good. That's a marvelous sounding program. You're also helping military families. Tell us about your Solar Strong program.
Yeah, so Solar Strong program is a new project that we just started. We plan on putting solar systems throughout all the military housing in America, which is roughly around 120,000 homes, mm-hmm. right? These are going to be totally free systems.
These are all in San Diego County or nationwide?
Nationwide. We recently started in San Diego. We have a huge Lincoln military housing here for all the Navy.
Yeah.
So they're getting free electricity
Wonderful.
For their homes.
Wonderful. Now, another thing I understand is that you have a referral program called the Ambassador Program, and this is a way that people can make a little money even by referring people. How does that work?
Yeah, so our Ambassador Program gives people the opportunity to spread the word, mm-hmm. show and demonstrate the true benefits of solar and what our company offers, and in return, they earn incentives.
And is that only for individuals, or can organizations such as, say, a nonprofit organization participate in this?
Yeah, organizations, nonprofits are more than welcome to join as well.
Very good. Well, our nonprofit East County Magazine will be definitely looking at that one. If you want to get more information about Solar City, you can go to the East County Magazine website and just click on the Solar City button there, and it'll take you to all the information on all these wonderful programs that you've just heard about.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Or you can give David a call at
858-525-2151.
Very good. David, I want to thank you so very much for joining us today and sharing all that valuable information about solar with our listeners from Solar City
and the Give Solar Foundation.
Thank you very much for having me, Miriam. I had a lot of fun having the opportunity to talk about how the solar industry has changed throughout the years and some of the benefits that are available right now.
Very good.
Well, that's certainly a hot topic as people continue to seek ways to reduce greenhouse gases, global warming, as well as save some money on their utility bills in this era of rising electricity rates. Thanks for joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a proposed water rate increase in the Helix Water District. A public hearing will be held on October 7th at 5 p.m. at the Helix Water Board District office in La Mesa, where they will consider implementing a proposed schedule of increases that would raise water rates over the next 5 years. Now, the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association is fighting back. It says increases of up to 70% over 5 years, instead of assessing any rate increase need on an annual basis, is unacceptable, and it is organizing a letter-writing campaign for people in the district to write in. If more than 50% of the ratepayers protest, then the rate increase cannot take effect. In addition, the GMIA is holding a meeting on the issue at Murdoch Elementary School on September 30th. You can get more information on that meeting at the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association website at gmia.org. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. Now here's the buzz. The County Board of Supervisors has unanimously approved new rules Wednesday that will promote beekeeping and local agriculture. Supervisors approved a new tiered beekeeping ordinance that will allow beekeeping hobbyists and businesses to keep bees and hives closer to roads, property lines, and homes in unincorporated areas of the county, but still far enough away to keep people safe. Bees not only produce honey, they are an essential part of plant reproduction, carrying pollen from plant to plant. Commercial beekeeping businesses pollinate avocado, broccoli, onion, fruit, and seed crops across San Diego County. Biologists and beekeepers worldwide have been sounding alarm since 2006 that bees are disappearing, with blame placed on pesticides and parasitic mites. County supervisors wanted to find ways to promote beekeeping, economic development, and protect both bees and the public. The new beekeeping ordinance creates three tiers of distance regulations for beekeepers. Current regulations require everyone, small and large beekeepers, to keep their hives 100 feet from roads and 600 feet, that's two full football fields, away from homes. The new ordinance will allow backyard beekeeping hobbyists in general to keep two hives within 25 feet of roads and property lines, 35 feet from neighboring homes, and 150 feet from sensitive sites where there may be small children, the elderly, animals, or others who could be physically challenged. Small commercial beekeeping companies will be allowed to have up to 20 hives, but the setbacks will be farther. While large commercial beekeeping companies will be able to have unlimited hives, set back 100 feet from roads, 300 feet from homes, and 450 feet from sensitive places. The ordinance will also institute a beekeeping education and outreach program. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who brought the issue to the board, said, "I would urge all the beekeepers, the current ones and future ones, to go make that honey." The ordinance is set to be heard again by the board on September 30th for a second reading and will take effect in 30 days if the board approves that second reading. The county's agriculture weights and measures officials said they would return to the board in 2018 to update supervisors on how the ordinance is working. Department officials at the direction of the board said they will also continue looking for chances to lease county-owned properties to beekeepers.
Too often we only hear complaints about government, but here's some good news about several County of San Diego programs that have won awards for helping people. The California State Association of Counties each year gives out awards for the programs that demonstrate leadership and produce results that provide better service to residents, also saving time and money wherever possible. This year, San Diego County took home 7 awards, more than any other county in California. A local program that helps safeguard vulnerable adults in dependent care has received the Innovation Award, the highest honor given. In addition to the Innovation Award, 2 programs were selected for Challenge Awards and 4 others for Merit Awards. For the Innovation Award, the County Health and Human Services Agency came up with protocols for protecting vulnerable adults at risk of elder abuse that produced some positive results, particularly for those with communications issues or severe cognitive impairment such as dementia. The county won 2 Challenge Awards. The Sheriff's Veterans Moving Forward program is a rehabilitation and treatment program for incarcerated veterans that have reduced recidivism, meaning less people are going back to jail, by linking participants with community programs and reentry assistance programs upon their release. In the first year of the program, 77 inmates were successfully returned to the community from the program, and not one returned to custody on a new charge. That's compared to an expected return to jail rate of about 20-45% according to local and state averages 1 year after release from jail or prison. Another program utilizing Medi-Cal expansion to increase healthcare access enables Medi-Cal eligibility workers in jails and probation reentry facilities to process inmates' applications so that they can receive medical and mental health services upon their release. Over 1,800 individuals are currently active in Medi-Cal through this effort, and the county has estimated significant savings. The other four San Diego County programs to receive merit awards include the following. The online appointment system for immunizations established an online and bilingual appointment system that now includes 3 public health centers, reducing wait time for customers from over an hour to just 6 minutes. The Planning and Development Services Template Permits Program streamlined the process for minor permits and eliminated repetitive data entry by developing templates that pre-fill much of the permit data, which has resulted in substantial savings in transaction times. Another program called Protecting Public Health by Getting the Word Out involved the Department of Environmental Health's launch of a mobile web application for sdbeachinfo.com, where anyone can get the most recent water quality information for San Diego County beaches and bays at any time on their smartphones, tablets, or computers. People on the go can use the app to get info on water quality conditions at local beaches and avoid potentially unhealthy water after storm runoff, for example. Real-time invasive pest mapping is an agricultural weights and measures project that allows the county to track invasive pests more accurately and quickly disseminate information about the infestation. It also allows the county to quickly communicate the extent of the spread of a pest and therefore make better decisions on limiting or eradicating pests. It's good to see the county awarded for helpful and efficient programs in government. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The U.S. Navy has agreed to stop using sonar and explosives in sensitive areas off the coasts of California and Hawaii to protect marine mammals. Federal court ratified a legal settlement ending 2 cases brought against the Navy by conservation groups. They argued that sonar can cause whales and dolphins to go deaf and even die, and that constant marine training exercises harass the animals, who then alter their patterns of feeding and breeding. Attorney David Henkin with the nonprofit law firm Earth Justice says this resolution was a long time coming.
For many years, we've been urging the Navy to take some reasonable steps, and the response consistently has been that it's not possible to do that.
The Navy has now agreed to take the animals' needs into account when scheduling its war games and other training exercises. Ships will avoid corridors important to reproduction, feeding, and migration, especially near San Diego Bay, Catalina Island, and the Channel Islands. Attorney Zach Smith with the Natural Resources Defense Council says his organization has been working on this issue for 15 years. He applauds the Navy for agreeing to slow its ships down in certain areas in order to reduce ship strikes of whales.
This is a great result to settle those disagreements by showing that we can achieve all of our national security needs while at the same time maximizing protections for marine mammals.
Parts of the agreement take effect immediately, others within 60 days. The settlement expires in 2018. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Liz Albert with a sports report here on KNSJ. Hockey is back in San Diego. Individual game tickets for the San Diego Goals went on sale on Tuesday. The Goals' first game will be against the Grand Rapids Griffins, the AHL affiliate of the Detroit Red Wings, on October 10th at the Valley View Casino Center. The Goals will begin training camp with the Ducks Friday in Anaheim. A team-specific camp will be held September 28th in Anaheim. The Goals will play exhibition games against the Ontario Reign, AHL affiliate of the Los Angeles Kings, on October 2nd and October 5th, and begin practice in Poway on October 6th.
This is Joanne Armstrong with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today I'm here with Monty Turner, a volunteer with Senior Gleaners, an organization that picks fruit and other foods and donated to local agencies that feed the hungry. Welcome to our show, Monty.
Thank you.
So my first question for you is, with the unique name Senior Gleaners, where did the term gleaning or gleaner came from?
A gleaner is somebody that comes in and picks surplus food or crops It actually goes back to biblical times when often a ruler or a wealthy person would set aside part of their crop and then after harvest time would let the peasants or poor people come in and harvest the remainder.
Okay, tell me what exactly your organization is about.
Now, the senior gleaners do two things. One part of our mission is to collect surplus fruit from throughout the county. We do a lot of picking in backyard gardens, can be anywhere from a couple of trees to a dozen. And we also collect surplus food from grocery stores and food service providers. And that can be anything from bread that has expired to food that just hasn't sold and isn't going to be sold. So rather than have that go to waste, we take it and we truck it to a warehouse where our recipient agencies come on a regular basis, take it to their distribution points, and give it to their clients.
That's perfect. So how is the recipient chosen when you're distributing the food?
The people that are eligible to receive those donations must be meeting the federal poverty guideline. They receive the food at no charge. We provide it at no charge to those distributing agencies. And none of our volunteers, nor any of our board members or people that do our coordination, no one is paid on our side either. So it's a free service to people that are also in turn not charged for what they receive.
Okay. And I understand that your organization is in need of volunteers. On average, how many volunteers do you need and what are the tasks of the volunteers?
We currently have a group of about 65 volunteers. We could use way more. Besides people to do the tasks that I mentioned of picking fruit, driving vans to then transport the fruit back to our warehouse, people to staff our warehouse, to sort the food, and to be there to help load trucks when the recipients come in. We also have a need for people to help with administrative tasks, keeping track of our volunteer hours, answering the phone, coordinating where we're going to go to get the food. So a wide variety of needs.
And since homeowners are allowed to be donors, how could they benefit from donating their surplus foods or their fruits, I should say?
There are several benefits to the homeowner. Just a basic one is that we're saving them a lot of work. If they have extra fruit on trees or produce that they're not using, they don't have to pick it. They don't have to clean it up. On fruit trees, it's very beneficial to get the fruit picked off before the next crop comes on. It's more healthy for the trees. And we also give them a receipt, and they can value the amount that they've donated and use it as a tax deduction.
That's perfect for those who are trying to figure out how they continue their crops but also pay for the water bill.
Yes, one reason that we're looking for more donors is that some of our traditional donors, their crops just aren't doing as well as they have in the past because of the cost of water. So that has really increased our need for more donors to make up for the ones that aren't able to give as much as they have in the past.
And for our listeners who are interested in becoming a volunteer or a donor themselves, how could they get in contact with your organization?
They should call our coordinator, Elaine, at 619-463-6356, or they can email her at ehiel@aol.com.
And we will also post this on the East County Magazine website under our food section. Before we end, I would like to ask you, what agencies do you support?
There are a variety of agencies that we support. These range from churches to food pantries. We provide food to a teen transition home. So there's a huge variety of people that get the food. It's all over the county, and we estimate that the need is 10 times what we are currently meeting. So we have a huge need for the food and for volunteers to help us collect it.
What are some of the achievements your organization accomplished this past year?
In 2014, we were able to gather 500,000 pounds of food, and we distributed those to 45 agencies. We had 65 volunteers, and they provided 10,000 hours of volunteer work to accomplish that.
That's truly amazing. That's really good for the people. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for helping us spread the word.
Anytime.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning writer Marnie Friedman. My guest wears many hats in the field of literary arts. She's a playwright, screenwriter, ghostwriter, magazine writer, blogger, and workshop teacher. Welcome, Marnie. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Let's start with your experience writing plays and films. I know that Playing with Mona Lisa was made into a Disney film. Tell us a little about that journey from the USC School of Filmic Writing to seeing an actual movie made of your work.
Well, it's a very complicated and messy process, but basically it was made into a play in Los Angeles, and that received some pretty good reviews, and it was based on a period in my life where I was dumped, and I was just looking at how funny it was, how down in the dumps I was, and I started to write about that and what it's like to be a young writer in Los Angeles, which is just kind of getting swallowed up in the sea of muck.
Right.
For lack of a better word. And piece by piece, we decided we would put it together and try to do it ourselves. And then one thing led to another. It sounds so much smoother saying it like this, but it took years of insane tenacity for it to finally meet its home, which it ended up that Disney took it on. And we got some wonderful actors. We got Elliot Gould and Marlo Thomas.
Wow.
And Johnny Galecki and just Harvey Fierstein, some people that I really admired and loved. And it was amazing to watch it come out.
And so how did you keep yourself going through, you said it took years. What kept you motivated, inspired?
I have this thing where, do you know that machine where you get bopped down and you keep popping back up? The
right.
Whack-a-mole, that's what
right.
It is. I kind of liken myself to a whack-a-mole, like I just keep popping back up somehow.
That's a good trait.
I think that's kind of what you need to do,
uh-huh.
Especially when you find a piece that you really love, that says something that you really want to say, then you have that belief inside of you that it's worth sticking out through all the crap that you have to go through.
Wow, it sounds like you have the right attitude. You've also worked as a script doctor for Fox Searchlight, Disney, and other film companies, and you've worked as a script agent for the Mary Sue Seymour Agency. What's it like being a script or book doctor as opposed to just focusing on your work, something that you love?
Well, it kind of goes back to your last question. That's one of the ways that I survived was, you know, I discovered that I was able to help other people. I figured out I was very resistant to plot for quite a long time.
Mm.
And once I embraced that you actually needed structure, I was able to help other writers with their structure. And I was also a dialogue specialist. It was just one of the weird things that came to me. So that was one of the ways that I was able to make a living. But it was like an honor to help other writers mm-hmm. try to tell their stories. It was the beginning, I think, of what I do now as a writing coach.
Right. So that leads to my next question, which is about ghostwriting. It's an interesting term. It means the person in the spotlight is someone else writing while you, the ghost, is hidden in the background. Well, no, you're doing the writing, and the other person has the spotlight, excuse
yeah.
me. So how has that affected your work, being the ghost in the background? Has that added to your tool of skills in writing and teaching?
Yes, and it stinks. I mean, I was writing for a series of how-to books, and the first time I'd never done it before, and someone offered me the job, and I said, sure. And then looking at the book that's in the bookshelf, and you see the guy wrote, why I wrote this book. And it was the most frustrating thing, because right. It was like, you didn't write the book, dude.
Exactly.
So it has an element of being stinky. So I try not to do that. But if it's someone that really has an important story to tell and they just don't have that as their skill set, then it's, again, it becomes an honor to help that come to fruition.
I see. Then you become that person's voice.
Yes. You know what? The word voice, I think, is so much about what I'm supposed to do on the planet. I know that might sound kind of weird, but helping people to find their voice. So when I'm ghostwriting and it's actually allowing them to say something that they really want to say, like I'm working on somebody's memoir right now, there's something incredibly inspiring about helping them to get, you know, to do something they wouldn't be able to do and put a message out there.
Okay. I know that you teach writing workshops at San Diego Writers, Inc. in the UCSD Extension and that you run three popular writing groups, the San Diego Screenwriters Group, the Monthly Memoir Club, and the North County Writers Circle. And you're also a therapist for writers and artists. We know we need therapists. In your opinion, how does teaching really make a difference? I mean, not just to your students, but the writing community, like running these groups, how does that add to the community?
Well, I kind of have a passion for, when I first came out to San Diego, I realized we were all really separate. And, you know, sometimes in San Diego, it's very hard to be connected. And I started the San Diego Writers Network newsletter because I was traveling all around the county to, you know, from one group to the other, workshop to the other, but everyone feels very alone.
Right.
Often writers feel very alone. And there's something really magical that happens when a group comes together and they really want success for each other, something very nurturing. And it's wonderful to be able to facilitate that for people. And then just having the training as a therapist, a lot of times, like in my monthly memoir group, that's the first Saturday at Writers, Inc. Of the month. It helps with, you know, because sometimes with memoirists, they're traveling to really hard places. Mm-hmm. And so the therapeutic training kind of helps them to be safe and to actually go there and get their material out in a safe environment.
It seems like a really good marriage, if you will, the therapy and the...
It's weird. I didn't plan it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of fell backwards into it, but it feels very much like what I was always supposed to be doing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you feel like you're really in the right place at the right time. And I finally feel like that. I was like, I was almost in the right place, almost in the right place. And now...
You're in the right place.
Yeah.
And so I hear that San Diego Writers, Inc. is having some events in October.
They have a conference, actually. It starts on the 25th of October, and it runs to the 27th. And it's fairly inexpensive. It's a great way to get introduced into the community of San Diego Writers, Inc. On the 27th, I will be teaching a class in characterization. And another wonderful event that's coming up this in October, the 25th to the 27th, is San Diego Writers Circle is going to be performing their first annual one-act plays, and that's in conjunction with the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival, and that's at the Digital Gym in North Park, and that would be the 27th and the 28th at 7 p.m. So if you want to either come learn about craft or you want to support local artists, a couple of really awesome things are going on this weekend.
So the names of those two events are?
The San Diego Writers, Inc. Fall for Writing Conference. Mm-hmm. So if you Google San Diego Writers, Inc., it'll pop up. And, it's nine classes you can take for something like $100. Mm-hmm. And from top-notch instructors. And then the other one is called Darkness Unwound. And that's the series of spooky one-acts that's at the Digital Gym.
Okay. Well, good information out there. One last question. You're now busy editing your first online literary journal, The Literary Vine, nice name,
Thanks.
And finishing your first book, The Seven Essential Writing Tools. Where can we find this journal, and when will your book become available?
The book should become available in January if all goes well, but nothing has gone exactly according to plan.
Of course.
I've had to learn to a lot of patience throughout this whole process. And if you go to my website, www.thewriterinyou.org, it'll hopefully we'll be announcing when that is coming out. And the literary journal is we're kind of taking a slow track, meaning the best material. So we're just accumulating for the Literary Vine, we're accumulating some amazing material. So we kind of want to keep the call out there. So if there's any people that write short stories or you know, even excerpts from books that want to submit, we're happy to look at those as well.
Oh, keeping an eye out for those things.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
For more information on Marnie Friedman and her work, please visit her website, again, at www.thewriterinyou.org. This is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
The feds put California sword fishermen on notice Monday, warning they'll be banned if they continue to inadvertently catch endangered species, whales, dolphins, and sea turtles, in their nets. The Pacific Fishery Management Council set caps on the number of marine mammals that can be killed as bycatch when fishing boats use the mile-long, 200-foot-tall nets. Ben Entiknap with the nonprofit group Oceana notes the council also committed to putting inspectors or cameras on all gillnet boats by 2018.
This is a really big deal. They're finally stepping up to say that that's not going to be allowed anymore. And if the fishery does catch these species, they're going to shut them down.
Oceana estimates 885 marine mammals have died in gillnets over the past 10 years, trapped with the nets cutting into them and drowned when they can't surface for air. The recommendations must still be approved by the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is expected to implement new regulations before next summer's fishing season. Conservationists would like to see the 20 or so California sword fishing crews operating from San Diego to Monterey switch to less damaging methods to nearby sea life. Entiknap says those include harpoons and deep-set buoy gear.
It's more work to selectively target these swordfish rather than just setting out a mile-long net and then just throwing everything over and keeping the swordfish. But it has to happen to protect our ocean wildlife and have a local, clean, sustainable fishery.
Sword fishing drift gillnets are already illegal in Oregon, Washington, parts of the Atlantic, the Mediterranean, and even Russia. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.